Welcome to Deep Dive Wine Acoustics, Episode 6, Chateau de Roux Bordeaux, if I said that correctly. I'm Andy Tarnoff, the host of the Deep Dive Podcast Network. I'm joined by Courtney Taylor, wine enthusiast, musician,
guy. Yep, that's me.
Welcome back.
We have a few reasons to believe that it's Roux. One is that Chateau is E-A-U-O.
But there's no X, so it could be Roux. And then I think it's Roux.
And then there's Bordeaux, which is E-A-U-X.
Right.
But maybe the E missing makes it Chateau de Roux. I don't know.
It could be, but we're going to find out. Someone's going to correct us if we're saying it incorrectly. And I do speak a little French, but I think that's a proper noun. Chateau de Roux, de Roux. Regardless,
it is. Chateau de Rocks.
Could be Chateau de Rocks. I like that. This is a Bordeaux, and we're finally drinking a Bordeaux, which is like your jam, oh, right?
It's my world. Yeah, and we've got a camembert, a good, soft, stinky French cheese.
Yep.
And happiness.
I'm excited for this one, because I did not particularly care for the last wine, but that was the one that we kind of screwed up a little bit. We had the wrong year.
I think you had a year that was significantly different than my year. But now you know. Now we know how different a year can be. Yeah, let's talk about it.
Tell me about it.
It says, what it says on it is Cru Bourgeois. Now, Cru Bourgeois is a newish rating for Bordeaux. I think it maybe appeared in the 90s and then it went away for a number of years. And now it's back and mad as hell. And it just means that it's, historically, it means it's good wine. It's not great wine. It's not Grand Cru.
All right.
And it's generally affordable bourgeois. It's for the, it's a middle class wine.
And right. This one wasn't very expensive, I don't think.
Even with, no, it was maybe $25. So it might have been on sale, though. You know how they tend to clear out once they, and this probably came from Whole Paycheck. So
we did go to Whole Foods for this one. We kind of shopped by FaceTime, which was probably annoying to the other customers, but it worked out for us.
Yeah, I think it was just annoying to the guy who was helping me. But you know, I think people who know about wine enjoy helping other people find wine.
Yeah, yeah, I'm kind of excited about this one. Is this? Do you think this one's going to breathe and change as we go through the episode?
My guess is. Absolutely.
Well, in that case, I think we should open it and then
shall
keep talking about
them?
It.
Okay, great. Yeah. Let's do it. Here we go. Oh, foil came right off. No foiler alert on this one.
Not on mine.
Loose and groovy.
Oh, there you go. There we go. Okay. After I corked this last time, I don't trust myself anymore.
Hey, did you invest in a double jointed Somm key?
Yeah, I just don't know how to use it because, I mean, I do, but last time I tried this live on the podcast, I broke the cork off.
Okay, well, then maybe what you need to do is not pull it all the way out, get it really close, because if you think about the leverage, it's going to be angling it away from vertical. Right? The farther it goes, the more it wants to pull to one side. So get it all the way out. Okay, look what I'm doing. Get it almost all the way out.
I did. Yeah.
And then just pull it straight up, turning it. That works. That is a good cork, too. I love that smell. Smells
like
think
about
wine and cove and cork and must and age.
You believe it only in corks, right? You're not a screw top guy.
I you know, I spent enough time in Australia that I'll do it, I'll tolerate it, but I won't like it. And I just love cork. It's romantic, it's ancient, it's
right. But other than that, do you think it changes the taste of the wine?
Cork? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. It certainly is a thing, you know. I mean, I like the glass corks that they're putting in now. The glass stopper with the rubber rim.
Oh, I haven't seen that. How do you get those off?
Two thumbs.
This one sounds delicious.
On one side, there's that Bordeaux thing.
I have a good feeling about this one.
Hmm.
Let's try it.
Woo! That's a tart guy.
It is.
It's not as rich right off the bat as some of the Cru Bourgeois that I have in my cellar. If I find a good Cru Bourgeois that's like $20, I will buy 5 cases of it. You're never bummed that you did. It's okay. This one seems okay. So hopefully it'll settle down. I would not expect a wine to be this thin and tart that has the Cru Bourgeois rating. So I really guess I don't understand what they've done with that.
Are you disappointed concept. Off the bat here?
Oh, definitely, definitely. But you know, disappointment is the spice of life.
I thought it was
as I always paprika. Say.
Oh, could be paprika.
You're getting paprika off the wine?
No, I was saying that's the spice of life. I was just being a smart ass.
Paprika is the spice of life.
Right. The cheese is good. Cheese is really good.
God, it's definitely not disappointing. Mm.
All right, I'm going to try the wine with the cheese and see if I...
Okay.
It tastes a little different. Better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be.
I think it's better. All right, so we paid about $25 for this, both of us at Whole Foods.
I'm gonna dump a bunch of wine into this glass in case it aerates and does kind of knit together and become thicker, the viscosity that I like. Then I'm going to be happy wine. That I poured so much. Now, you went ahead and got water. I did not get a glass of water for myself today, so I'm going to have to take it easy a little bit.
It's a bunch of bullshit anyway, as Brent says.
It's shit.
You want to hear some opinions on this wine from others?
Of course. Love this game.
First of all, I should point out the bottle doesn't have any description whatsoever. So they're just cutting right to
the
chase.
Not on the back?
Just like, nope. No,
just drink the wine. Yeah, they're just going, buy it. If you just bought it, drink it.
Drink it. Okay, so you wouldn't know by... If you made your choice by looking at the bottle, you'd be kind of screwed. Although it does have a nice little chateau. There are a lot of words on this label.
Now, does it say mise en bottle au chateau?
This is exactly what it says. It says 2019 Cru Bourgeois, Chateau de Roux or de Rox.
I'm going to go then with, actually, if you think of Coke au vin, right?
Yeah.
Coke au vin, A-U. With an X on the end, I don't know why there's an X, probably with the Moors invaded and put X's on everything. But I would say that probably Chateau de Roux.
Okay, then we're going with that. But then there's a whole lot more stuff on here. There's Haute Médoc.
That's a region. That's the High Médoc. So it's up the hill a ways, which is where better wines tend to come from, hillsides, higher elevations. Okay.
I'm going to try my French. I did actually take quite a bit of French in high school and college. Appellation Haute Médoc Contrôlée. So that means something.
Very good. Same thing with the word
Okay, then we got more. We got Grand Vin de Bordeaux and then just a
Grand Vin. Grand Vin. Grand Vin de Bordeaux.
But they don't even mention that it's Bordeaux until the little text at the bottom.
Does it say Miss N Bottle au Chateau?
Yeah. In fact,
okay,
it does.
Good. So that means it's coming from a real chateau, a real place. And And so it's at least not industrial wine where they're just buying juice or grapes from somebody else and dumping it in with other people's grapes. It's actually from a place. So that's really cool. That happens a lot in Bordeaux because they have such huge amounts of land. If you're in Burgundy, they have tiny tracts of land. If you're in Chateauneuf-du-Pape, sometimes they have like bedroom-sized plots of land. And thus they have 14 different grapes they can blend. I think there's only five that Bordeaux can blend. There's Petit Verdot, which is almost exclusively a blending grape. Cab Franc, which if you get into the southern Rhone, when you get into the hotter territories down there, it becomes a main grape often. And then there's a Cab Sauvignon and the original grape Merlot. And I know there's one more, and I can't quite remember what it is. And I think it's something that I've had as a main varietal or exclusive varietal in a wine, and I did not like it. So I think it's a very rich and dense, a lot of low mid-range complexity that is, I find, a bit nauseating. So that probably would have gone well in this, a little bit of this to thicken it up. If it indeed stays as thin as it started.
I don't know if I notice that like you do, but I think with the cheese, it tastes better. That's all I can say.
It is thickening up. It's not as crazy as just right out of the bottle.
I missed my chance to make a Monty Python joke when you were talking about tracts of land. Huge tracts of land. It's from The Life of Brian, I think. Or now maybe that's from...
Sounds like Holy Grail.
Holy Grail, yeah. Huge tracts of land. All right. So have you heard of Roger Voss? He's a wine critic.
No. Okay. Does he write for? Anyone?
He's for Wine Anyone Enthusiast. Anyone and everyone? He said...
my buddies.
Yeah. We're not talking shit about them.
You're
just
going
to make me edit it out.
We are not.
So Roger Voss says this estate close to the Gironde estuary has produced a densely textured wine, which doesn't sound like
it's thin. Whoa, he's so talking shit. He is talking out his ass. It is not a densely textured wine. I'm telling you, somebody else is going to say...
He said the opposite of what you just said. No, you called it thin and he called it densely textured.
We'll contradict each other openly playing this game.
Maybe we'll invite Roger Voss onto the podcast.
Hand him a bunch of wines and just see what he says.
Yeah.
Well, he'll probably just sit there and go, I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to say? I don't know.
Maybe
what do
he's...
you say? Rich, ripe, ruby. I don't know. Stone fruits. What? I don't know.
Close. Jeez. Close. He says it's half and half Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon. He says
it's pretty normal.
He said it is juicy with black currant flavors laced by spice.
It is so not juicy, and there is no black currant going on here whatsoever. I would say red currant, raspberry, red fruits, not strawberry, and tangy. It's just light and tangy. It's like what Beaujolais wants to be, or we wanted it to be.
Yeah, let's never speak of that again. That was episode two, I think. That one was episode three. That was episode three, I believe.
Episode three.
That was some shitty wine. He gives
the great Beaujolais letdown.
Roger Voss, whoever he is, gives us a 91.
I'd say it's a 91.
And he says it will age well and drink from 2025. So perhaps we haven't hit its max.
Well, or he just says that so that by 2025 people have forgotten about it. They can't even get it. They can't find it anywhere, and he comes across looking like a knowledgeable man.
There's not a lot.
Did he even taste this? Do you think he even actually tasted this?
I hope so.
I don't think he did.
There's not a lot to say about this one. There's just not a lot of reviews out there. I don't know why.
And he's got a Norwegian. He's got a Norwegian, a distinctly Norwegian last name, not known for their expertise in French wines. Yeah.
People say that you should pair this with chili. Potatoes?
You're making this shit up right now. You are totally... I love anything mushroom with almost any red wine. So, okay, that works. But go back. Potatoes? What the... They don't even have flavor. Potatoes are what you flavor them as. And then the first one was... What was the first one you just said again?
Chili.
Bizarre. Okay, that's bizarre.
It gets weird. Yeah, this is strange. Pork, salami, prosciutto, pungent cheese, lamb, onion.
They nailed it on the pungent cheese. But, you know, they've got a splatter gun. Whoever wrote it has got a splatter gun approach. If I just say every food I can think of in the next 8 minutes, I'm going to nail it on three of them.
You can't go wrong if you just name every food. Sooner or later, you're going to get it right. That's weird. I don't know. I think this one's okay. I don't know. I had high hopes.
Okay, let's look up another one.
Aren't many.
Right, it is an obscure wine. That's why they got such a great deal on it at Whole Foods. See, I didn't say whole paycheck. You see that?
Jeff Bezos appreciates and thanks you for saying that.
Yeah, please send me a whole paycheck.
Please sponsor our podcast, Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. More information available on our show page.
He can't afford me.
I can't find any more information on this wine. I don't know. We're just going to devote ourselves.
When it comes to wine, I can't be bought. It'll just come out of my mouth. The truth will just spew forth. And I can't help it. This wine doesn't suck, though. This is definitely a little weird. We tasted 7 Bordeaux for my wine bar a week and a half ago. And I get lamb, you know, kebab. I get rice and falafels and dolmas. And we do very mild... Greek cuisine, or actually it's Lebanese, down the street, the Sultan Cafe. Fantastic. Okay. Really good. And it's really good food for tasting wine, particularly Bordeaux. And what's interesting is at a Lebanese restaurant many, many years ago, I had to call a friend of mine who is an older knighted by the Queen of England.
Really?
Who had he had built the Swalec Stadium in Wales and brought the ashes to Wales, of all things. Ashes have only the cricket competition has only been in, I believe, India, Pakistan, Australia, and England, maybe? Or maybe only Australia and England. And they send the ashes back and forth of the cricket bat. That was the trophy. The cricket bat was the trophy for whoever won. And at one point, either the Australians burnt it to ashes and put it in the box and sent it to England, or vice versa.
Just to fuck with them? That's great. That's amazing. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So they keep sending the ashes in the box around. You won. Okay.
All right. Anyway.
But it had never been to Wales, and here's what a dick. The Prince of Wales was
King of England.
Now he's the king of it. Now he's the dick of England. Mm-hmm. He's supposedly the Prince of Wales. The ashes. This is a global turning point. Is now going to Wales, right? They're gonna battle out for the ashes in Wales at this awesome stadium that a guy I met on the Queen Mary 2 crossing from New York to Southampton. Amazing dude. Incredible. He's passed now. He was an older dude. But that's the hard part about how wonderful older people are. They die before you, generally. He was incredible. But I had to call him because he knew a lot about wine, more than I did at the time, for sure. And I said, I'm at a Lebanese restaurant. I'm drinking one of the best wines I've ever tasted in my life. Why is that? And he goes, is it called Chateau Moussard? And I said, yes, it is. And he said, Courtney, in the 1800s, if you were French and you had money, you vacationed in the Côte d'Azur. But if you were fucking loaded, you vacationed in the Lebanon, and they needed wine. Rich people wine. So you have amazing French-style wine coming out of the Lebanon for 200 years now.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so we should try one of those. They're expensive, but we can do a special expensive Chateau Musard episode.
First of all, it's going to be
$50 at least a bottle.
We can do a special one every now and then. First of all, I do love that, once again, when you do old British man voice, you get that guttural, I don't even know how you get that grumbly.
No, Paul Russell, and he sounded like that. We used to go stay with him and his wife at their house, which is the estate that the last place that Cromwell lived. He had the tennis courts and the pool and the pool house. And he and I would go down to the pool house every early in the day. We'd wake up, have his manservant, Roger, would,
of course,
or the wife would make us breakfast. And then we'd go down to the pool house, and he would be in one room and I'd be in the other, and we would get on our phones and start, you know, he would start yelling at people. But anyway, Charles wouldn't come. Charles, to go back to that, I'm sorry, I didn't finish that. Charles wouldn't go to see the Ashes, the cricket battle for the Ashes fought out in Wales, where he was the Prince of Wales. So the...
Too far or what?
Yeah, he can't. It's too far for a...
Can't take his fucking walk. Chariot or, you know, his horse-drawn...
Chopper.
Chariot. Or his
his motorcycle. It was too cold. He didn't. Anyway. I can't ride my motorcycle. No. Anyway, I'm reaching for funny, and it's just not happening.
Actually, I like it because that's how we started rolling insult. On this. Yeah, before we started rolling on this, I could tell you were in a bad mood. So
I'm in a good mood now.
In a bad mood.
Uh huh.
I like it. This one's a little bit all over the place.
So anyway,
but that's okay.
He wasn't the business partner in building it, but he became the business partner in running it and all this stuff. This even older than Paul was guy said something disparaging about how insulting it was that the Prince of Wales isn't going to see the Ashes battled for in Wales, the first time in history, this amazing pivotal moment, and in Wales, Welsh history, of course, and you know, UK sporting history in general. And he wouldn't come. And so he made some disparaging remark in an interview in a big press, tabloid press or whatever they have in England. And wow, was he in trouble. And so one morning I woke up and Paul said, Courtney, how's your handwriting? Is it legible? And I said, my dad was an engineer, so my handwriting is very terse. It's, you know, it's very square and very engineerman like. And And he said, can you write this? And it was something like, you know, Your Highness, or so, you know, my sincerest apologies for the, and I was like, I'll write it, but what the fuck is going on? And this is cool. And he goes, you're writing a letter for me to the Prince of Wales. And
who knew?
It never got sent. It got kind of cleaned up in, you know, the press, spin control. You hire the right publicist and it fixes everything, apparently.
You think Tom Jones went to that cricket battle? Just thinking.
Tom Jones, you mean the 1800s novel?
No, I mean, what new
Portuguese? Oh, the Welsh singer. Whoa, the Welsh singer.
That one. Yeah.
Yeah, God, that I wish I knew. That is a good question.
I bet he did.
Man, have you ever got on YouTube and Googled Tom Jones live on the Old Gray Whistle test.
Yes, yes.
When he was 26.
Coked out of his mind.
Oh, no, that was before cocaine. Are you kidding? They had never heard of that shit.
I don't know what he was on, but that guy
was... Dude, he was amazing. I've seen him. So cool. And that's the thing. I mean, whoever you grow up knowing as an older celebrity, mm-hmm. were generally incredibly cool. And this is what's so great about YouTube now. And one of the very few things that are amazing about the internet and the access we have.
Our podcast, for one.
Anything. And our podcast. Is that they're just so cool. Great actors that seem kind of stodgy, stupid, and old when you're 15. Now you can go back and see what they were like when they were 20. And or 40 even, you know. Just amazing. I just watched Sean Penn play Spicoli. And he is so completely that character. He nails it.
And he's not like that in real life, which, I mean, he could not be more opposite than Spicoli. You had so much to talk about in this episode, because probably by the time this thing runs, because we're recording a few weeks ahead, ideally, the 30th anniversary Dandy Warhol show will have ideally come and gone. And theoretically, I will have been, I'm like speaking in the future and in the past, but I'm coming to Portland because we're going to do a live episode. Not a live episode, but one in person for a change, which is something we've never done before because we've been doing all these remotely.
That's why I'm currently outraged and angry about the technology, the amount of BS technology it takes.
We're going to fix it.
I'm recording this mic is going into GarageBand, and then I have my assistant come and figure out how in my antiquated lappy it gets sent to you halfway across the nation.
Yeah.
So and it's a big nation. It ain't France. It's America. Big. It's huge.
It's America. Yeah. Hopefully in person we'll be able to maybe be funnier. Although I think
I think we're pretty funny. I like us. Hey, let's talk about this wine now. I think it's becoming interesting and I like it. I think it's impressive. I don't feel sluggish. I think I might still be able to access my vocabulary.
What has changed here for you?
All right, let me think.
Tastes less tangy to me.
It's less tangy, and that screaming convoluted high end, high mids, and high end have now organized themselves and are revealing a very complicated, almost smoky note in the top end. Are you noticing that?
Let me try it again. I do taste some smokiness, but I can't tell how much of it is based on the cheese.
Yeah, there's a complex high end. I mean, it's still really grippy, and dude was right. It definitely wants another, several years, couple years at least. To settle down those tannins. It also seems like they might have left it what they call on the skins, where the juice just sits on the skins have all floated to the bottom. Or, I mean, settled to the bottom or floated to the top. And they just leave it on there. And that gets more what they call grip, which is that chalky tannin.
Yeah.
And that has settled down a little bit. And that settles down over years. And this will be a good wine to age because there's so much tannin. And now there's some low end coming in, so it does feel more like a balanced wine. It's not drinking green orange juice,
It is definitely better than it was when we opened the bottle.
Yeah, I would say this is a legit wine. I would recommend it. I would also recommend decanting it. And I think we should probably have an episode where we show people what a decanter is, what the point is, how I go about it. Because I have a sort of a hack filtering system to try to get any chunks out or, the little crystals of tannin acid.
Jumping around a little bit.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about the Dandy Warhol's 30th anniversary. And I was thinking back to the first time I saw the Dandy Warhols. And it was in Madison in like, I don't know, 2010 or something like that. And what was interesting about that show was Fathead's drum pedal broke. And I've never seen that happen. Perhaps you've never seen that happen. And we had to take a break while someone brought
in another. Oh, I've seen it happen. I think I just saw it happen recently in London. That was
How's that happen? I don't even know, but there's a pause.
It never happened to me when I was a drummer. And I was a drummer in every band I was in until the Dandies.
Well, I've never seen it happen live, but what did happen...
It happens to Fathead.
It happened to Fathead, and you guys had to take a little break, and you came out by yourself, and you played an acoustic solo version of Every Day is a Holiday. And I thought, that was cool. That's also an unusual... First of all, it's one of my favorite Dandy Warhol songs, but it's also...
Cool.
Almost the same chord throughout the whole song.
Yeah, it's one of those one chord songs where you just get the jam on and then you slide it away to make it satisfying when it comes back, you know? And then you go, you blah, 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 and then you do it again. You bobble around down below and stumble around in the basement and then you pop up again in the sunlight, you know?
So I was wondering if you could show us how to play this song, given that it's
okay.
Just a few chords.
Okay. So I do this on E barred, not this. You can play it full chords.
Right.
I've never played it full chords. So it's this summertime if I was getting paid. And I don't think people have noticed what a darling sentiment that is to go to say, summertime, if I was getting paid for getting drunk and getting laid, I'd call you and say, quit your job because I got it made. And it's funny, I wrote this about an aspiring supermodel. I wrote this as a... I was on the phone with her from London, and I had a big crush on her, but she was way out of my league at the time.
Oh,
you know?
I think I know who this is, but I'm not going to say it.
Duff McKagan's wife?
Maybe not. I thought it was Kate Moss.
Susan Holmes. She was so cool, and I ended up having a relationship with her best friend, who is a great painter, and really cool, too. Obviously, very cool. I kind of, you know, date people or, you know, brains first is what I always say.
Their brains first.
But she was, she had said, oh God, you know, I said, hey, how's...
She talks like a British old man too.
I said, hey, how's, you know, wherever she was, somewhere fabulous, you know, Barbados or some shit. And she goes, oh God. And you know, another, yeah. She went, oh God.
Oh God.
Another,
wait, is that
she
Paul?
Said, but she said another lonely night in a hotel room. And I was just like, oh no, no. So, and then, you know, and we chatted a little bit and I said, cool, well, I'll see you in, you know, in LA. She would leave the keys for me and let me stay in her pad when I was in LA working. So I had this, you know, what I thought was an amazing
setup, situation.
You know, apartment, which obviously to her, because she was in that league of like, you know, they would put her up in like the Four Seasons and even crazier. I mean, sure, she stayed in plenty of $2,000 a night hotels and suites and penthouses and stuff like that. And so I just thought, God, man, work is work. No matter how fabulous it's supposed to be, work is work. And I was in the same situation somewhere else in the world, but of course I can feel the springs in my back when I lay on my bed. Like I'm at that level at the time. I mean,
this is one of your early songs, so you guys had not really hit it big at this point.
Absolutely not. We didn't even have a record out on Capitol yet. We had an indie label record out. So, yeah, this song, you know, I'm just laying there with the springs in my back with an unplugged guitar, which is a great way to write. I still try to get the feel I want out of an acoustic guitar when I'm just trying to come up with getting stuff out of me when I'm feeling emotionally, you know, clogged. And if you don't mind my French... But
you're funny today. You're good today.
Thank you. I'm angry and I'm bitter today.
I thought you might be an asshole today, but you're being really funny. It's good. Keep it up.
Good. That's how I'm an asshole and bitter. But so yeah, I just thought, I mean, that was the first line. You know, if I was getting paid for getting drunk and getting laid, I'd call you up and say, quit your job because I got it made. And then it goes to the ducking down thing. I like to, you know, when you take a moment to deviate away from the drone of the... But it's, I think I'm going... and let the other instruments drone. When we play this song acoustic, obviously you pick it and you milk it for the most feeling of the notes you can. So, and then it goes... Summertime, if I was getting paid, forgetting drunk, going over there, and then it goes, anytime, baby, let's go. And that can also be played, oh, that can be played in folk chords, you know, anytime. Yeah. God, I'm not
trying. I'm trying to watch. Now. No. I'm trying to watch it. Is that E, G? I can't tell what that is.
No, it has to go to a B. That's no fun to play.
No, that's hard.
Full chords. Okay, so B, G, back to E, and you were just ducking.
Yeah. See, I think those.
God, I'm a mess. Well, you know, actually, we had that discussion about how I can't see in the middle of my vision. I can see a pinhole in the center, which makes it possible to read maybe a line or two of text messages.
We should probably stop texting then.
Well, you should stop saying. And aside here, just to explain, I wanted you to know that like that is completely useless dialogue.
So you just want like one word text? You want more brevity? Is what
possible. Gaps. Oh God, that'd be great.
Fuck you, man. I'm trying to explain what I'm doing and you're telling me I'm talking too much.
Yeah, but have you noticed that I just call you?
Like, you want me to call you? I'll call you.
It's just easier for me to call you.
Yeah, folks. And, folks watching this, Courtney and I are now having a fight about who's... communication
fighting.
Style.
We're fighting.
We're adding some drama.
And I hate it when you don't do the. I hate it when you don't wash your dishes. Okay,
I don't have a manservant.
Yes, not like Paul.
Exactly.
Sir Paul.
I need Paul's manservant.
Okay, so then it goes down to B, G, and then back to the root, and then it does the wonderful. B, G, D, A, back to B, the five, which is like the most John Philip Sousa classic chord change. To what you do before you go back to the root. Now, here's an effed up thing, because I'm a Renaissance music guy.
Yeah.
And that's the 1500s.
Really?
And sometimes it goes into the 1600s, into early Baroque. And then late 1400s, which is medieval. But some dickhead, king, pope, whatever, some high hat back then didn't understand where the root chord was. He didn't know. And so he sent out an edict, and it makes me think it was a pope, because a lot of religious music in the Renaissance, of course. And I've noticed there are some people who didn't do it, but they had to return to the root every, I don't know, 25 seconds or something.
Is this a real thing? Are you making this up?
This is a real thing that I've heard, but it's also...
Did you hear it from Anton?
I wouldn't know it. No, actually, Anton, I don't think could really identify the difference between, you know, Renaissance or classical unless I, you know, pointed out this is Renaissance, this is classical era, you know, because they're different. The Renaissance is the 1500s, Baroque was the 1600s, you know, classical was the 1700s, and Romantic was the 1800s. And that's loose. That is very loose.
Give or take
40 years, you know, almost half a century, basically, if you want to slide them around a bit on a visual layout.
Time
but, but, yeah, and so I do have to deal with da-da-da-da-da every 20 seconds. being a fan, a huge lover of Renaissance music. And I started to notice that not all Renaissance music had that idiosyncrasy. And I kind of still a bit believe that that's how I can tell the difference between religious composers of the era and secular composers, what the religious people call secular.
Why you use an electric guitar instead of an acoustic guitar to write music?
It's less hokey. I found just by necessity that having an acoustic guitar when I was a young man and we were first starting the band, I slept alone like all the time on a queen size futon, which has plenty of room for a guitar to sleep next to you. So in the middle of the night, if I woke up in some kind of crazy dream and had an idea, I could just open my eyes, reach over, there it is, lay it across my belly and start doing this. And there's something about the high jangliness of it. It's exciting and it has so many subtle harmonic inflections that you can pick really cool notes to sing out, and it elicits a lot more feeling out of me than an acoustic guitar, which is, you know, it's kind of dowdy or frumpy and old timey. It's a little too emotionally earnest for me. Like, I'd have to be incredibly depressed and vulnerable and really just submerged in some pretty icky feelings to be desperate enough to really feel an acoustic guitar, unless it was a very special acoustic guitar.
One more question about this song, and then we'll get back to the wine. When you wrote this, did you think it sounded like Hungry Like the Wolf? Or am I the only person who thinks that?
No, I've been told that a number of times. And it might be because, you know, that was sort of the end of my utter devotion to Duran Duran. Was, you know, Hungry Like the Wolf is great. Rio was not their first record, which is, it's beyond, to say it's perfect is to underrate that record. The second record is very good and has some amazing moments on it. But, I did listen to the hell out of it, of course.
That was not in your head while you were writing that song?
No.
Okay. I think...
And of course, they have the greatest bass player of all time,
you know. As referenced in episode 2-1. I don't know. I'm gonna have to go back and look at all these things. There's a certain, you know.
First one.
This is a serious point, actually, though, because you made a really good suggestion about this podcast, which is, and it's a happy accident because it happened from your phone dying in the last one. We are gonna do like a postscript the next day. So we don't have to make our final comments after drinking a bottle of wine. But right now, what do you think of this wine?
I got to warm it back up. When the glass feels colder than your hand, Well, I guess it will, because you don't want a 100-degree glass of wine.
This glass is 98.6 degrees. I like it.
I really like this wine. It's great. It takes a while to open up, but, man, I would give it a 92.
It's a lot less tangy and...
grippy.
Grippy. It's less grippy, grip. Right? It's got less grip.
Yeah, it's got... the tannins are still there, but they're what they refer to as fine, silky tannins now.
I like it. I can't identify any notes whatsoever. I keep trying, and I'm not picking up anything.
No, it's really a different kind of wine. The fine, silky tannins, I was going to say, are like that thick. I mean, they really are from the top of your head down to the middle of your chest. It is a mostly soft, silky expression of stems, seeds, and skins. And it's silky. Warm low end, but not even remotely jammy or flabby. It's just there to make those huge layers of tannin seem really kind of nice and drinkable. This is a hell of a wine, dude.
Huge tracks of land. I think it's good. I would buy this for $25 easy. Yeah,
and it might have been less. It might have been 22. I don't remember.
Yeah, this gets the Andy Tarnoff wine seal of approval.
Man, if they have any of it left at Whole Foods near you, anyone out there watching this, go get this wine and buy all of it. Buy every bottle they have left. Stick it in your basement or stick it somewhere not that doesn't get warm in your house or your apartment. You will never regret it.
It's stick it where wine. The sun don't shine, people. In the meantime, you Definitely. Should be like liking,
to quote,
subscribing.
To quote the Bad News Bears.
I have a feeling that when we do this next episode in person, it's going to either be very long or very, very ridiculous, and we're going to drink a lot of wine. I hope you're ready for that.
It's going to be a bloodbath.
That's how you make the best content.
Shouted down. We're going to be shouted down by the wine world. After that,
we're gonna be shouted down by the wine world and the fine folks of Portland, because
this is a great wine. This really is a great wine.
Let's see how you feel about it tomorrow when we come back.
Okay.
Just like that, we're in the future.
Yeah, look at that.
Entire 12 hours passed or something like that.
Yeah, a good 20
hours. Two, yeah, I least. Feel fine. How do you feel?
I feel good. I thought space-time continuum travel was supposed to really upset your digestive health.
You would think so with the speed of light and all, but no, it just totally worked out okay. Also, what worked out okay was the Chateau de Rocks.
Yeah, Chateau de Rocks.
Or Roe.
What do you think? I tried it. You kept drinking on through. I waited and had some with dinner several hours later, and it was pretty intense. It's a very mid-rangey experience. You know, there's a lot of acid in there. Obviously, the tannins, we both commented on how thick they were. I mean, it basically was from the top of your head to the your lower jaw, so the bottom here, and that's about where it stopped. And then it just kind of had an acid thing. It did have low mids that made it balanced. But, I would say it needs a couple more years. Just leave it in the bottle for a couple years to really, really get there. But I enjoyed it.
I have a hard time describing this one. The other one seemed really obvious to me. I will agree that it started out tasting kind of thin, and then it got kind of thicker. So that was more pleasant. It left me with no sort of hangover. It didn't even make me feel crappy last night, so that's a good sign. I thought the cheese pairing made it taste way better.
I think both the cheese and the wine had a great benefit of each other. Camembert is a great wine, a great cheese for that wine particularly. I think it's a great wine cheese anyway, but I love the high. it really turned my mood around from hate and all this technology of trying to get the earbud to work and the app and the you know, garage band for the microphone. I mean, God, it's just a nightmare over here of new goofball technology trying to integrate into, you know, my ancient stuff. And boy, that made for a great day.
Yeah, I think you're right about the high, because we've consumed some wine that has left us silly, and some that's left us kind of angry, some that's left us drunk, and some that didn't seem to do anything. But I just felt fine. I sat down, I rested for a few minutes, then I started editing this episode, which I hope is going to be as amusing as it seemed while we were doing it.
We should recap the Lango wine, which I think just said Nebbiolo on it, right? That one didn't seem to do anything. That had almost no high to it at all. It just, that was this one. And it just tasted like really good wine, tasted and smelled like good wine. And then, of course, obviously the Beaujolais was very depressing. I think, now we did a Barolo too, didn't we? Like an affordably priced Barolo.
We did. And I've got some of these bottles sitting behind me. I've got the BV Cabernet, which is still one of my favorites.
That was exciting. Those two were so excited. Those were the first two we did, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
And right off the bat, both of them, the high was elative.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think for me, this is like a pretty good bargain. I checked. It's $20.
Wow. Okay.
So you can't go wrong with that, right? Apparently, I got all sorts of wine streaks all over the label, so that must be a good sign. I don't know.
No, you had fun. You partied.
I like it, and I also like the idea of recapping the next day when our heads are clear.
Clear and a little bit sleepy still.
A little bit sleepy. So we'll see what the next one is. That one is going to be episode most likely in person. So I hope you pick out something good. Reminder that people should be liking and subscribing. If Jeff Bezos wants to sponsor our podcast, he can follow us, or anyone wants to sponsor this podcast, at Deep Dive Podcasts on the social medias. And I don't know,
we'll consider all offers.
We're not committing to anything, but we will take them under advisement. Yeah. See you next time, hopefully in person. And let's keep on keeping on.
All right. See you, dog.
Thanks.